On some of my other tapes, I make a shahakal during the shiur, but I already drank before it, so. First of all, it's a zechus to come together two nights before Yom HaKippurim, and Yashar Koach for all of you. For everybody has somewhere to be and something to do, so thank you for making this one of your things to do. I want to start with a very short story that happened a few years ago, not far from here, and it will hopefully frame our goal for the next 45 minutes or so. There was a young yeshiva boy learning, not in Israel, learning here in America. And he came from a prestigious Rosh Yeshiva kind of family who lived in Eretz Israel, but he was learning here in America. And around a week or two ago, he was trying to figure out, he was going home to Israel for Sukkot. And he's trying to figure out when to book his flight. Should he's going to be home for Sukkot, but should he go home for Yom Kippur through Sukkot, or should he stay in America for Yom Kippur, and then he'll go back right after Yom Kippur, and wherever he's learning in his yeshiva, and he'll be home for Sukkot. So, he went to get an etzer from one of his rabbeim, who he figured what he didn't know what to do, so he asked his rabbi. His rabbi said, you know, what I would have told him, whatever you want to do, you'll do. Whatever, you're going to daven fine either way. You'll daven in yeshiva here, you'll go back to your parents, your father's Rosh Yeshiva, you'll daven in your father's yeshiva, you'll be in a good place for Yom Kippur. What's the difference? Do whatever you feel like. He still didn't know what to do, so he decided to ask somebody else who he respected. And the fellow who he asked, the rav that he asked, said, this question is so simple. It's absolutely pashut what you have to do. It's not even a question. It's so 100% obvious. Of course you have to stay here in America. You can't go back to Yom Kippur. You can't go back to Eretz Yisrael for Yom Kippur. I'd love to be there. Eretz Yisrael for Yom Kippur. Why? You're here for Rosh Hashanah. You started Aseres Yemei Tshuva here in America. If you go to Eretz Yisrael, you're going to be losing 7 hours of Aseres Yemei Tshuva. How could you possibly go to Eretz Yisrael for Yom Kippur? The answer is not what's important to me. The idea, the message of what we have, the hours that we have ahead of us, the opportunities that we have to take advantage of, is hopefully going to frame this evening's discussion. Let's try to start with a very simple question, just to put things in perspective. A simple question, you might have heard before, you might have heard the question, you might have heard the answer. If you have, that's wonderful. If you haven't, that's also wonderful. We know the Gemara that tells us that, of course, in Rosh Hashanah, there are three books. Tzadik Gemurim, Nechtamim, La'alter L'chaim, Rishon Gemurim, evil people are sealed for death on Rosh Hashanah. And Beinonim, Tzuliyim, Ve'omdim, the people in the middle, we're hanging in the balance, literally, or figuratively, however you want to have it. And then I want to look at the next three words. Im Zachu, if they merit, Nechtavim L'chaim, they'll be written for life. Vim Lo Zachu, if they didn't Zachu, then the opposite, God forbid. What do those three words mean? Those two words, Im Zachu, if they merit. So I'll tell you what I think it means. There's a Gemara in Kiddush that tells us that a person should always look at themselves as though they're halfway, they're on the halfway point. One mitzvah makes me tzaddik, because we're judged by how we are 50%. If I push myself to the 51st percent, I'm in that ballpark. And the Mishnah, the Gemara in Kiddush continues. You should look at yourself, not just yourself, the entire world. Every opportunity you have, you do one mitzvah, you're tilting not just yourself, but kol ha'olam kulo to zechus and chayim for the whole world. That's the opportunity every Jew has. And the inverse, person, God forbid, makes the wrong choice, it's not just for themselves, but the entire world. So, im zach, if you do mitzvos, during Aseret Yemei Teshuva, fine, Zach L'Chaim, we get Chaim, and the opposite. But that's not how the Rishonim read the Gemara. That's not how they understand. It's not if you merit and do mitzvos. Says Rabbeinu Chananel. Says the Rambam. Im zachu, if you zocha to do tshuva, then you get chayim on Yom Kippur. If you're not zocha to do tshuva, then no. And the question is, why does it have to be tshuva? Why not a little tzedakah, a little chesed, a little Torah, a little checking your clothes for shatnez, whatever it is. Why only tshuva makes a person be zocha, those beinonim, those of us who are beinonim, which is probably all of us, that it shifts us to that chaya. A lot of people are in different kind of parishes in this community. And Klal Yisrael is also in a parasha with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You see, we're a little bit dirty, a little bit gooky, a little bit grimy. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu has this big, gigantic, you ever go, you see janitors who are cleaning in facilities, they have that bucket about this high, filled with whatever, some kind of liquid that you never want to put your finger into because you never know what will happen to your finger afterwards. And they take the liquid and put it on the mop and mop the floors with that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has one of those gigantic, gigantic buckets. He's the perfect shidduch for us. We are so dirty, and he is so much Ajax. We're the perfect shidduch. And that's why if we don't take advantage, says Rav Itzel Blazer, the top Talmud of Rav Yisrael Salant, if we don't take advantage of the incredible opportunity, specifically of tshuva, not any other mitzvah, the opportunity that exists during Aseret Yemei Teshuva, unlike any other time of year, the rest of the year, a person could do tshuva. If it's not a Tanis Tzibur, their independent individual tshuva may not work. Tanis Tzibur, yes. Only during Aseret Yemei Teshuva does an individual's personal, private, independent tshuva work, no matter what, no matter how, no matter. And that's why the opportunity for tshuva is so incredible during specifically Aseret Yemei Teshuva. And if a person does tshuva, yes, Zoch L'Chaim. But if they do any other mitzvah and tilt themselves 51, 52, 53%, it's not enough. It has to be tshuva and only tshuva. Before we talk about actually doing tshuva, I want to talk a little bit about our attitude towards life before we get to tshuva. We're all part of B'nai Yisrael. Yisrael had 12 sons. And we're called Yehudim. Which is funny, because Yisrael's Bechor is Reuven. So wouldn't it make more sense if we were all called Reuvenim? You ever wonder about that? This is a question I heard from my son's first grade Rebbe, Rabbi Hoffman, Avraham Hoffman, who lives here on the Heights, a tremendous tzaddik. How come we're called Yehudim, not Reuvenim? If we look carefully at Reuven and Yehuda, very quickly, we find a remarkable contrast in their attitude. And after we look at this for a minute and a half, we'll see why we're called not Yehuda, not Reuvenim, but Yehudim. Look at a few of these cases. Reuven comes back looking for Yosef. The bar is empty. What does Reuven say? Hayela deinenu v'ani ona aniba. Yosef's gone, what am I going to do? Period, that's the end. Yehuda says to his brothers, how could we, chas v'shalom, let him just die, do whatever, we have to sell him, let's make it happen. Vayishmu echav, they all listen to him, and he gets things done. Next case. B'nai Yisrael, B'nai Yaakov are waiting to figure out if they could go back down to Mitzrayim, not go back down to Mitzrayim, they need food, they're getting hungry. And Reuven says, please, you could take my two children, kill them if I don't do it, if I don't bring Binyamin back. And Yaakov replies, no. And that's the end of the parak. Yehuda says, Abba,
If you don't let us go, we're all going to die. Why should we all die? Just give me the kid. Let's go down. And they go down. That's the second scenario. The final scenario. Yosef, before he lets his brothers know that he's Yosef, he's still Tzafnas Paneah. Tzafnas Paneah takes Shimon, puts him in prison, and what does Reuben say to his brothers? Halo amati aleichem, al techadu bayeled. I told you so. I told you not to do it. And that's the end of the story. Yehuda, when Binyamin is taken by Tzafnas Paneah, what does Yehuda do? Vayigash elav Yehuda. What does Vayigash mean? Rashi, the very beginning of Parshas Vayigash, has a number of pshatim. One of them is, Vayigash always means approaching for battle. Rashi says, Yehuda comes in front of Tzafnas Paneah and says, give me him back. Give him back to me, or I will kill you. And of course, right after that, history becomes history. Three times, Reuven just lets life happen. Three times, Yehuda doesn't let life happen. He takes things into his own hand. He makes things happen. He's proactive. Somebody, a dear friend, wonderful person, has a very interesting attitude. Whenever they get some kind of like sickness coming along or pain, their first reaction is, I'm not going to the doctor. Because whenever they get pain, they're nervous that it might be something serious. So their attitude is, I'm not going to go to the doctor, so I can't find out if it's something serious, because I don't want it to be something serious. They're paralyzed when they're scared. There are other kinds of people. Some people, they're not paralyzed. They just don't get around to ever doing things with themselves, don't get around to moving around. There's inertia, right? We all learned physics. If we didn't learn physics then, that's all you have to know. There's something called inertia that just makes you lazy. And people don't do things because there's inertia. There's another reason why people don't do things, when there are things to do. And that's apathy. Just couldn't care less. Doesn't mean anything to them. Why should I do something? Why should I do something? Very beautiful one-liner. In 1967, after the famous Matzah Guru radio broadcast, Harabayit Yodenu, Harabayit Yodenu. You probably heard it. If not, YouTube it. All the Tzanchanim are standing at the Kotel. They're all crying. And one of the Tzanchanim grew up on the Shomer Hatzir Kibbutz. Didn't know anything about the Kotel, nothing about Jewish history, nothing about Torah, Mitzvah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he sees everybody on his right is crying with their heads mushing into the wall. And he looks to his left, and everybody else is crying with their helmets, I should say, mushing into the wall. And all of a sudden he starts out crying. Until he realizes, so somebody asks him, hey, Dudu, I assume that was his name. Dudu, lama ata boche? Ani boche al ze, shani lo boche. There's an apathy, but sometimes that apathy, we could cry because we don't care about crying. And that itself is sometimes enough to bring somebody to be able to cry so that they could cry. We sort of want to do tshuva. Any person, all of you who came tonight, whether you want to do tshuva or not, you at least want, we all want to at least want to do tshuva, and that's why we're here. So we're heading in the right direction. And now we have to figure out how not to be a Reuven and to just let the rest of the hours of Aseret Yemei Tshuva happen, but to grab them by the reins, by the horns, and run with them and take them to the end zone. I want to talk tonight two points. About how sometimes when we look at life and we look at situations that are handed to us that are not always what we imagined or what we painted and drew for ourselves in our own minds painting tablet, painting block, how do we react? How do we deal with that kind of life that's put before us? Rabbi Hoffman, my son's first grade Rebbe, pointed out a very fascinating thing that you see in Sefer Dvarim. Sefer Dvarim talks a number of times about Bnei Yisrael going through really, really, really hard times. And one time, in Parshas Vayelech, it says, after all these things happened to me, you'll say, Ein Elokai b'kirbi. That's why Mitzauni kol hara'a sa'ela. Hashem isn't with me. That's why all these terrible things happened to me. Hashem isn't with me. And what does the next pasuk say? What's Hashem's reaction when we say, Hashem, I guess He's not with me. Va'anochi haster astir espanai mehem. I will hide my face from them. The next parsha. The next perek. Another story. We have the Tochacha of Dvarim. All the klolos in Sefer Dvarim. And right after that, after all this terrible stuff that befalls us, Pasuk says, V'shav Hashem Elokech, Hashem will come back to you, V'richamecha, and He'll come back, and He'll take us back, and He'll gather us. Both situations are situations where we found ourselves in deep, hot water that's really troublesome. Miserable situations. How come the first miserable situation, Hashem says, I'm walking away? And the next miserable situation, Hashem says, I'm going to take you back. I'm going to come back to you and take you with me. We'll go back together to Eretz Yisrael. Because the second story has one extra pasuk. In between the fact that it says that all these troubles will befall you, and the third pasuk where it says that I'm going to take you back. V'shavta at Hashem Elokecha. Two people, two experiences. Bnei Yisrael, two different times in history. Terrible things could befall us. The question is, what is our attitude going to be? If we say, Kin ein Elokecha b'kirbi, Hashem's not with me, so Hashem says, fine. Adios, amigo. You don't want to be with you? You don't see me? You don't want me? You take a hike, I'll take a hike, and some other time. But if the same exact kind of situation falls upon a person and they're able to say v'shavta ad Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's reaction is, I'm coming back to you. I'm coming back with you. Let's go together. That's the first point of how we could try in our own little way to deal with what Hashem gives us. Try to seek Him out more and more and more and more. The second is the following. We're not just Yehudim. We have another name too. We're Bnei Israel, we're Yehudim, and we're Ivrim. Why are we Ivrim? Because we're the children of Avram HaIvri. What does Ivri mean? Me'eva Hanar. He's on the other side. And Chazal understand it's not so significant that he crossed the river to get to Eretz Yisrael. A lot of people in history crossed a lot of rivers, and we don't call them Ivrim. But he was on one side of a conceptual river, a side of, he had a certain perspective, the whole world was on the other side. And let's see what happens to Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu looks at himself and says, what's going to be with me? What's going to be with my future? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, Sei meha'it tagninus shelcha. Take a step out of the cosmos that you're in, of your astrological sign. Ki ein mazal li Yisrael. Avraham Avinu looked at the stars and saw that his fate, his fatalistic destiny was one of whatever it's going to be. That looked bleak to him. And Hashem says, buddy, you're an Ivri, you're different. You think differently, and I work with you differently. You're not bound by the stars. In Western culture, we don't use the word stars. We use the word statistics. We use the word probability. We're not bound by the laws of statistics. We're not bound by probability. Ein mazal Yisrael. We have direct hashgacha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do with each and every one of us whatever He wishes, can bring the greatest brachas out of the most obscure places and most obscure times, because He can do anything. And we're not subject to any limitations and any way of looking at things as it doesn't seem like anything could happen. What does Ein Mazal Yisrael mean? It means you're not supposed to say Mazal Tov? It means there's no, we're not dependent on the astrological signs? Rashi doesn't say that on that Gemara. Let me share with you five incredible words of Rashi. What does Ein Mazal Yisrael mean? Why is there no Mazal Yisrael? Why are we above the stars? Why could anything happen to us and we're not subject to the laws of statistics or probability? She'al yedei tefila uzechus. Mishtane mazalo letova. With tefila and zechus and mitzvos, we change whatever our future will be. Tonight, this Wednesday night of Aseret Yemei Teshuva, all of us here are going to sit together for a few minutes, and we are going to, we'll daven in a little while, over the next few days, we are going to change our mazel. We're going to change our mazel from whatever it was, and we're going to jump out of that same yad, segninas shelcha, jump out of that mazel with our ma'asim tovim and our tefillah. And I want to share with you one thought. And this is going to be my tshuva thought for the evening. How is it? What is it? What is the zechus that we could, my own personal suggestion, could work on for the next 2 days, 3 days actually. Yom Kippur also is Aseret Yemei Teshuva. How could we, Hashem will come back to us, but we have to take that step. What step could we take? To preface what I'm about to say, I want to ask, share with you something very personal. I'll start sharing it. I won't fully share it. I want to share with you what is, for me, the scariest one word in the entire Machzor. Try to think for a minute what, for you, is the scariest word in the Machzor, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. I want to share with you what mine is. But before I do that, I want to share with you something. I think it's an incredible piece. George Saunders is a professor at the University of Syracuse, best-selling New York Times author, and he spoke at this past 2013 University of Syracuse commencement. He gave the commencement, the convocation address at graduation. And the editors of the New York Times magazine section liked it so much that they asked him if they could reprint it. I also liked it, so I didn't ask him, but I'm going to not print it, but share with you. So this is George Saunders' commencement address to the graduates of University of Syracuse 3 months ago. Down through the ages, a traditional form has evolved for this type of speech, which is some old blank, his best years behind him, who over the course of his life has made a series of dreadful mistakes, that would be me, gives heartfelt advice to a group of shining, energetic young people with all of their best years ahead of them. That would be you. And I intend to respect that tradition. Now, one useful thing you could do with an old person, in addition to borrowing money from them, is to ask, look back, what do you regret? And they'll tell you. So, what do I regret? Being poor from time to time? Not really. Working terrible jobs, like being the knuckle puller in a slaughterhouse, and don't even ask what that entails? Nah, I don't regret that. Do I regret occasional humiliation? Like once, playing hockey in front of a big crowd, including this girl I really liked, I somehow managed, while falling and making this really weird sound, to score against my own goalie for the wrong team, while also sending my stick flying into the crowd, nearly hitting that girl. No, I don't even regret that. But here is something I do regret. In seventh grade, this new kid entered our class. In the interest of confidentiality, her convocation speech name will be Ellen. Ellen was small, she was shy. She wore those horn-rimmed glasses that, at that time, only old ladies wore. When she was nervous, which was pretty much always, she had a habit of taking a strand of hair into her mouth and chewing on it. So she came to our school in our neighborhood and was mostly ignored, occasionally teased. Hey, your hair tastes good, that sort of thing. I could see it hurt her. I still remember the way she'd look after an insult, her eyes cast down, trying as much as possible to disappear. At home, I imagined after school, her mother would say, you know, how's your day, sweetie? And she'd say, oh, fine. Her mother would say, oh, making any friends? And she'd go, oh, yeah, sure, lots. Sometimes, I'd see her hanging around alone in her front yard, as if afraid to leave it. And then, they moved. That's it. No tragedy. No hazing. One day she was there, the next day she moved. End of story. Now why do I regret that? Why, 42 years later, am I still thinking about it? Relative to most of the other kids, I was actually pretty nice to her. I never said an unkind word to her. In fact, I sometimes even mildly defended her. But still, it bothers me. So here's something I know to be true. Although, it's a little corny, and I don't quite know what to do with it. What I regret most in my life are failures of kindness. Those moments when another human being was there, in front of me, suffering, and I responded sensibly, reservedly, but mildly. Chafetz Chaim asks a question. This wasn't in the University of Syracuse. When we put the Torah away, we say, Mi Ale Bar Hashem. Mi Yakum B'Mekom Kodshah. Who's the person who's going to be able to climb to the summit, to the pinnacle of Hashem's mountain, to stay in his Har Kodesh? That's the question we're all asking ourselves. What do we need to do to get there? To make it there for in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eyes? Neki Chapayim, you're clean. You didn't do anything wrong. Bar Levav, pure heart, clean heart. Not soiled, not grimy, not gooky. No, that's not enough. Shelo Nasa Lashav Nashi. The person who didn't carry their neshama for naught, for nothing. If our neshama goes back to Hashem clean as a whistle, but it didn't do anything productive in all the time that it spent here, that's carrying it for naught. The one who could climb to Har Hashem is not just somebody who's clean, who didn't do anything wrong. It's somebody who made a difference, somebody who made their life worthwhile, productive, and made a difference. Doing nothing wrong is nice, but that's not what we're here for. We're here to say a kind word to somebody, to be the shoulder that our roommate, our sister, whoever it else is, to cry on. That's the Chafetz Chaim. But now back to George Saunders at Syracuse University. Now the million-dollar question. How do we do this? How might we become more loving, more open, less selfish, more present, etc., etc.? Well, yes, good question. Unfortunately, I have only 3 minutes left. Baruch Hashem, I have a few minutes more than that. One thing in our favor. Some of this becoming kinder happens naturally with age. It might be a simple matter of attrition. As we get older, we come to see how useful it is to be selfish. How illogical, really. We come to love other people and are thereby counter-instructed in our own egoism. We get our blanks kicked by real life, and people come to our defense and help us, and we learn that we're not separate. And we don't want to be. We see people near and dear to us dropping away, and are gradually convinced that maybe we too will drop away. Someday, a long time from now, most people as they age become less selfish and more loving. So quick end of speech advice. Since according to me, your life is going to be a gradual process of becoming kinder and more loving, hurry up. Speed it along. Start right now. There's a confusion in each of us, a sickness, really, selfishness. But there's also a cure. So be good and be proactive. Do all the other things, the ambitious things, travel, get rich, get famous, innovate, lead, fall in love, make fortunes, lose fortunes. But as you do, to the extent you can, err in the direction of kindness. And someday in 80 years, when you're 100 and I'm 134, let me know how your life was. Drop me a line. I hope you'll tell me. It has been so wonderful. Oh, and by the way, congratulations, class of 2013. That's George Saunders' advice. Let me share with you one word, not really my advice, but I would say one of perhaps the most important lessons in Avodas Hashem that I have ever learned. And in case I think that just because I think therefore it's right, when I was living in Eretz Yisrael before I moved back to America, and my family knew that we were sort of getting ready over the next few months or years, wanted to return to America from Israel, where we were living. I applied for a position, a kolel of sorts, called Ner L'Elef. Ner L'Elef basically trains people to be involved in outreach. As long as you commit, that you get a stipend for a year or 2 years, and you have to commit to spend a number of years in an out-of-town community serving in some out-of-town capacity, doing outreach. And they were looking for a certain type of person who didn't just know how to read a lot of Gemara and a Rashi and a Tosos and a Rashba. And in that meeting, I was sitting there, and the fellow who was giving me the interview asked me a weird question I was never asked. So first he asked, what kind of Sfarim, like, not, you know, Halacha or Gemara, what kind of, like, other Sfarim do you read? Or philosophical stuff. I said, well, I like Shari Tshuva. He asked me the weirdest question. I was never asked this question. What's the most important line in Shari Tshuva? It's 150 pages long, buddy. Four Sha'arim, each Shar has between 50 and 170 sections. What's the most important line? I was thrown off by the question. And I thought for a minute, and I'll tell you, I got it. Yes, there is one line that I will tell you is the most important part. It is. And the way he was able to ask the question is because he also knew what the most important line was. And believe it or not, I was offered a scholarship because he agreed with me. The one most important line in the entire Sefer of Shari Tshuva. And I'll explain it after I tell it to you, is that the majority, the vast majority of a schar that the Jew will receive is not for avoiding temptation. It's not for staying away from averos. It's not for being careful with what they do and what they say and what they see and what they eat and what they hear. It's for the mitzvos asei that they do. It's for the mitzvot aseh that they do. And I'll explain myself in a minute. When you go home tonight, and your roommate or your friend asks you, so what did Rabbi Orlian talk about in his tshuva drash? You could tell them. Rabbi Orlian did not speak about averos. He didn't speak about chait, he didn't speak about changing our bad ways, and he spoke about doing aseis, doing kindness, doing good stuff. And let me continue with what that most important line of Shai Tshuva writes. He says, the heights of a Jew reaching their heights as a Jew is all in the ma'alos, in climbing the steps, in climbing the madrigos of mitzvos aseh that are not just actions. Did I shake a lulav? Did I do this mitzvah? No, 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 not those mitzvos aseh. The mitzvos aseh that are not acts. But identify us. And he gives a list. I'll share with you some of them. Ma'alas ha-bechira. The ability to make the right choices. So mitzvah saseyu, b'chayta b'chayim. Did you ever think, oh, did I... Some of you do put on tefillin, some of you don't put on tefillin. Did you ever think of your checklist when you go to sleep at night? Did I choose chayim? So mitzvah saseyu. Every person has their own choices. Where they're from, how they grew up, Milas Talmud Torah. The heights that they've achieved in V'halachta Bidrachav. In Latin, Imatio Dei. Imitating deity. How do you imitate Hashem? How do you imitate Hashem, the Gemara asks. Mahurachum Atahurachum. With Midos. How refined a person I am. Mila Shlemus Habitachon. How much of what we do is to make sure that we're going to take care of everything that we need to take care of. That we're going to cross every I. Sorry, we're going to dot every I and cross every T. To make sure that we make whatever we need happen. The way we know it has to happen. How often? Where's our Bitachon? Where's our Bitachon? It's a mitzvah of Bitachon. Milos hisbonin begadlus Hashem. You're driving down the freeway. You don't have to be a Los Angelino for this, driving down the Pacific Coast Highway. You could do it down to BQE also. It's a little harder. It's even harder on the Van Wyck. And you see there's a sky in front of you. And there are clouds. Do I reach Milos of heights and pinnacles of being close to Hashem by being misborn and how big he is? It's a mitzvah aseh d'oraisa. What heights do I reach in that? Milo zichron chasadav. Okay, I'm driving on the Van Wyck. There are no clouds. It's gray, like most of August and much of September. It's gray and dreary. There's nothing to be impressed or awed by or... What about just being having gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Think of all the incredible things that I have that He gave me. It's a mitzvah saseh d'oraisa. It's a mitzvah saseh. And he lists a few more. And then Rabbeinu Yonah, in this most important line, more than a line, a paragraph, goes ahead and says, "Uba'avur milos elu," and for these heights, not these actions, the heights of these mitzvos, nivra ha'adam. That is why we were created. Not to avoid avera, not to do a mitzvah, but to reach heights inside of ourselves. That's shalom asal ashab nashi, that we didn't bear our neshama for naught. Not just that we're clean, but that we were productive. That we set our heights, that we set our sights high, that we made something of ourselves, that we became more than who we wanted to become. With that in mind, and I told you, not just I, but I don't even remember the fellow who interviewed me. We both agreed this was the most important line in all of Shari Tshuva. With that in mind, I could share with you what for me is the scariest word in the Machzor. One word. One word. I think it's in Zichronos, if I'm not mistaken. Hashem looks down at the world and he ponders, he analyzes, he looks at Ma'aseh Ish. He looks at all the deeds of man. And it's the next word that frightens me so. Ma'aseh Ish u'fikudaso. And his or her mission. It's not so It's not so scary if Hashem just looks at what I did wrong. I didn't do so much wrong. Maybe I did. But what could I do? What could I have done? What potential do I have? Who can I become? How great can I imagine the chesed that I could do if I lived a life of chesed, committed to chesed? Imagine what my tefillah could be if I was focused on knowing that I could daven, who I'm davening to, and what I could become if I focus on my davening. Not that I did anything wrong, but who could imagine what a Talmud Chacham I could become if I learned a little bit more, if I worked a little bit harder in my learning, if I dedicated myself a little bit more to this mitzvah, to that mitzvah, if I sat and thought and did a little more hesperus and more gratitude. Imagine what I could become, no matter what. Imagine what Hashem outlined that I could become. How did I color in that black and white outline? What were the colors, if there were any colors? Blahs? Pastels? Are they vivid? Or is it just an empty outline of such great potential, so much opportunity, and I return it, leaving it nothing more than that, a stark outline. I could share any of a billion and a half stories about just doing good, doing goodness. Just one story just happened to hit me and touched me in a certain way, and I'll share it with you. It's nothing exceptional. It's nothing unique. It's nothing exotic. It's nothing that any of you, any of us, can't do or maybe even hasn't done. From Jerusalem Post, August, 2-3 years ago, article goes like this. This Shabbat, dozens of Jewish families were stranded in a traffic jam as Shabbat came in and were hosted in the town of Adam. The traffic jam was caused by an accident between an Israeli and a Palestinian car between the Chitzmeh and Adam junctions northeast of Jerusalem. Several individuals were injured in the accident, which occurred at 6 p.m. Friday evening. By 7 p.m., when Shabbat was coming in, traffic was at a near standstill, catching many drivers on their way home before sundown. As driving on the Shabbat is forbidden by Torah law, many Jewish drivers parked their cars on the side of the road, took their belongings, and walked, some of them more than a kilometer, until they reached the Jewish town of Adam. The first small groups arrived on foot as the Jews of Adam were beginning their Friday night prayers, Kabbalah Shabbos. "There's a giant traffic jam on the road," said the walkers, breathless. "The sun was setting. We realized we weren't going to make it," they explained, setting down their backpacks and belongings. The word spread like wildfire. Once the townspeople understood the situation, they mobilized immediately, sending several runners to help the stragglers enter the town, alerting the security apparatus, and quickly allocating stranded families to the Adam residence for Shabbat meals and places to sleep. By the end of Kabbalat Shabbat, not one family was left without a host, without meals, and without a house to lodge. Nothing remarkable. Nothing exotic. Nothing special. But me, Ka'amcha Yisrael. We don't live for ourselves. When Reb Chaim Volozhin died, his son Rav Itzel of Elazhin wrote an introduction to Rav Chaim, his father's sefer. And in that introduction, Rav Itzel of Elazhin writes what his father used to tell him day in and day out, over and over and over again. And this was the message that Rav Chaim of Elazhin would educate his little son, Rav Itzel, who later became great in his own right. What did Rav Chaim of Elazhin tell his son again and again and again until it was coming out of his nostrils? Lo la'atzmacha nevresa. You weren't created for yourself. You're not here for yourself. You are not here for yourself. You're here to do whatever you can do for everybody, not for yourself. I just want to finish tonight with a question and an answer, and then two practical tools to get ready for Yom Kippur. To ask this question that I want to ask, I'll tell you about a halacha. It's in the Torah. It's a masechta about it. It's called ni'ila, with an ayin. Ni'ila is using property that's owned by the Beis HaMikdash. I could steal from a person, I could steal from Hashem. I steal from the Beis HaMikdash. And it's not a good thing to do. You're not allowed to use Beis HaMikdash property for your own personal consumption. That's ni'ila. Now let me ask you the question. Before I eat an apple and drink a cup of water, I make a bracha. Says the Gemara in Brachos, and please tell me what this means. If a person eats an apple and didn't make a bori pri ha'etz, they did me'ila. I don't understand that. We just said that me'ila, they're stealing from a person, they're stealing from Hashem. It has to be hektish, it has to be owned by the Beis HaMikdash, it has to have been given to the gizbarim, the treasures of the Beis HaMikdash. Apples aren't. Oh, they're all owned by Hashem in a certain sense. They're not hektish, they're not imbued with kedusha. Mi'ila is only when you take something that's imbued with kedusha and use it for a profane, for a personal consumption. Why is it mi'ila? That's the question. There's a yid in Yerushalayim. His name is Rav Don Segel. A very, very, very holy person. There's a person who's so holy that he has a Tanis Dibur, not just Yom Kippur, not just Raseh Esmei Tshuva. It's hard to even imagine, but for all of Elul. But Don Segel asked this question, and he listened to the answer that he gave. And it takes somebody like that to give an answer like this. So I think we could all appreciate it where we are. Every apple has potential. Every cup of water has potential. Because if you make a bracha on it, kedusha is going to come out of that. So if a person ate the apple or drank the water without making the bracha, then the kedusha that was supposed to have emanated from that apple and from that cup of water is never going to happen. They took away kedusha. That's the answer to the question. It's not deep. It's not remarkable. But the application is not just to apples, and the application is not just to cups of water. Because absolutely everything that we are given has opportunity within it to become something of kedusha. And it's a matter of what we do with it. Do we make that bracha on it? I want to share with you an image. You're in your house, mind your own business, how you're looking at like the news, checking in to see what's happening in Syria on Google News or something like that. And there's a knock on the door. Okay, you throw on your slippers, walk to the door, look through. There's a sorrowful looking fellow at the door. His eyes are drawn in. He's skinny as a toothpick. Looks like he's starving, he hasn't eaten in 3.5 weeks. And he says in a quiet, raspy voice, "Could I have some food? Or a penny or two to buy some?" So let's say in a different world, you'd open your door and invite him in. And you say, "Please wait here for a moment." You go to the kitchen, see what you could offer him. He looks through the fridge. a little bit of this, a little bit of leftovers of this. He looks like he hasn't eaten in 3.5 weeks. He's not even asking for money, he just wants food. He's starving. He probably, you see, there's a leftover, there's a whole challah left. Tonight's Wednesday night, it's not so fresh, it's a little bit hard, but I'm sure he'd be happy to take it. So you take the challah, you walk over to him, you say, here, here's a loaf of bread. He says, thank you very much. As you're about to shut the door, he takes the loaf of bread, swings his arm back, whacks you straight across the face with a challah, unfortunately Wednesday night challah. I just gave you this. I just gave that to you. You're using it to smack me across the face? Says the Tomer Dvorah, Rav Moshe Cordovero. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the energy to live at every moment of our lives. Even during those moments that what are we doing? Even at the moment that we're smacking him kivyachol across the face, Hashem is giving us the energy to do so. Whatever we do, we're doing with what He gave us. What He gave us. When we do something good, He gave us the energy and the power and the abilities and the opportunities and the to do it. And whenever we do something that He doesn't want us to, He asks us not to do, we're taking the exact equipment that He handed us to create incredible things, and we're smacking Him across the face with the very life and life force and tools and evarim and brains and minds and eyes and hearts and mouths to serve Him. We have to set our sights high to become who we could be. To do that, I just want to finish with two practical points. One is a point that I end off with every year. And that is as follows. We're going to come to be Omid B'din Yom Kippurim, a few hours. And sometimes we wonder, sometimes I wonder, like, how stupid is Hashem? How gullible is He? We're standing there in Eila, Hashem, I am always going to say every Asher Yotzeh is so much Kavana for the rest of my life. Hashem, I'm never going to forget to say a Shahakol before I eat anything. Hashem, not only am I never going to say Lashon Hara, I'm never even going to listen to a word of Lashon Hara for the rest of my life from now till forever. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm always going to do every absolute thing that You want me to do, and I'm never going to do anything that You ever want me not to do. I promise, really. And the funniest thing is that we mean it. As we're saying, Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Elokim, Hashem Elokim. We mean it. We might be almost honest, but we're just thinking that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is like this. He's got the wool down over His eyes, kivyachol. Either that, or being big fat liars, one of the two. Neither of them bode so well for our situation. There's only one solution. There's only one solution. The only solution that there is by trying to find for ourselves tiny, little, realistic kabbalos, little things that we could accept upon ourselves, that we can change easily, that we could change practically, that we could change realistically. It ain't going to work to say, I'm never going to say Lashon Hara again. It can work to say, I commit myself to not say Lashon Hara from 10 p.m. to 10 p.m. for the next 3 weeks. And for the next 3 weeks, to be so vigilant for those 10 minutes that I don't even answer my phone when it rings. I only text. And I make sure not to text Lashon Hara. Or to say, I'm going to make sure to thank one person every day for the next 10 days so my sensitivity for other people, my sense of gratitude towards other people will be enhanced. Take the tiniest, tiniest, tiniest little. Today was a funny day in teaching this morning. I teach in the JSS program. And most of the students went on a trip to visit a Beis HaKvaros of Rav Yaakov Yosef Herman. Rav Yaakov Yosef, RJJ, who was the first and last chief rabbi of New York City. And the people who didn't go on the trip sat in my class. And I talked about this. And class was like this. First, there were two classes that I taught. First class, I taught about Yom Kippur. At second class, everybody took a piece of paper, including myself. And two lists. One list that we'll keep in our machzor and have it with us as we say vidui. List of all the things that perhaps could be improved upon. And we wrote down our own private ones with no one else looking, everyone sitting far away from each other. So we could say it as we say vidui to make it personal. Next to that list, I told my students about this point. Trying to take tiny, whatever you think you could do, commitments you can make, tiny kabbalahs you can make, cut it in half and then cut it in half again, make it as small as you can. As long as you think you could maintain it, you could keep it, cut that in half and cut that in half again. Something so tiny, it's so tiny that it's realistic. It's so tiny that it's honest. And after you do vidui, all 10 times or 5 times, as many times as you want on Yom Kippur, you'll sit down, you'll stand up actually, because you have to say vidui standing. You'll say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm going to show you that I'm not going to do those things again, because I'm going to do this little tiny thing for 2 weeks, and this tiny little thing for 6 days, and this tiny little thing for 3 weeks, and this tiny, tiny thing maybe I'll be able to last a month. I'm going to do that, I mean it. And then right before Ne'ilah, you're going to say it again. And then right before Ne'ilas HaShe'arim, you're going to say it again. And make those tiny commitments. That's the only way we could do it. If we want to be intellectually honest. That's the only way. The last thing is a line also from Shari Tshuva. He talks about Aseres Yemei Tshuva. He's not talking about Aseres Yemei Tshuva. He's talking about all different things that lead a person to come to do tshuva. And one of those 6 things that bring a person to tshuva, hopefully ought be Aseres Yemei Tshuva. The Ha'es Es Ratzon. It's a time that Hashem wants us. V'hatfila nishma asva. There are people who wake up at Nates on Purim to daven because it's the day that Hashem accepts tefillos. You know what? Maybe yeah, maybe no. But we have an explicit Gemara and an explicit pasuk that says that that's the case, that all 10 days of Aseres Yemei Tshuva. While you're walking home tonight, or while you're on the shuttle, or however you're getting home, just talk to Hashem and ask Him for stuff. Just ask Him. While you're walking, I had a Rebbe who used to tell us that, you know, people take the train. When I was in high school, people used to take the train to school. He said, you could daven on the train, you could talk on the train. Everyone talks to themselves on the train. You could also. So on the train tomorrow, on your way to work, on your way to school, just talk to yourselves. You look weird, it's okay, you're not the only one. This is a time that tefillos are the same tefillos, the same kavanah. They go in a different place. They have so much more power. I want to finish with one beautiful line, one line that I saw brought down from a Zohar in Kitisa. So much hard times and tough times that Klal Yisrael has found ourselves in, we find ourselves in. Hopefully, we'll stop there. The Zohar says this. He says, you know all the tzara of Golos? All of the tzara of Golos? As much tzara as we have to wait in Golos until the time comes, until the Gula comes, if we do tshuva, all of that tzara of Golos that is needs to come, that could happen with the tiniest little annoyance. One little annoyance, Hashem will consider as to be all the tzara of Golos that Bnei Yisrael has to encounter before the Gula comes. If we do tshuva. If we do tshuva. And I, during that class this morning, I asked my students a simple question. He gave the most profound answer. I said, how long does it take to do tshuva? And one guy, his name is Ezzy, he said, it takes a lifetime. And I looked at him and I said, you're totally, totally wrong. it takes 17 seconds. Tshuva takes 17 seconds. Hashem, I did X. I'm sorry I did X. I will try not to do X anymore. You're Baal Tshuva. You transformed yourself. You transformed Klal Yisrael. You became a totally different person, Jew, Neshama, anything and everything in 17 seconds. That's all it takes. Karov elecha hadavar ma'ol b'fich v'vavcha la'asoso. It is close to you. It's not hard. It's not forever. It's quick, fast. You can do a better job if you want. You're entitled to, but you don't have to. 17 seconds is what it takes. Be'ezras Hashem, we should, on Yom Kippur, we'll say the first part. We'll hopefully feel a little bit of charakta as we go. We just have to have that third step, making those kabbalos. With that, with our tshuva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no doubt whatsoever, will send us a year where all the brachos that we wish for ourselves, that we wish for Klal Yisrael, that we wish for our family and our family wishes for us, Hashem should send down all that bracha of Yomer Letzor Senu Dai, Tichla Shana V'Kilu Sa'a, Teichel Shana V'Birchu Sa'a, all the bad times behind us, and going forward, only good times, only bracha, Shnas Chaim V'Shalom, a year that we achieve all that we want to achieve for ourselves, professionally, academically, financially, socially, spiritually, certainly, in every last respect. And hopefully HaKadosh Baruch Hu will grant us all, and all of Klal Yisrael, Gemar Chasima Tova.